kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I completely botched my run in Slay the Spire, and now I'm mad.
Aww.
Yeah, like, we were pre-show talking, and I just lost my train of thought and didn't math properly. And so now it's all ruined, and I'm just going to sit here and pout for the rest of the show.
On the bright side, you know what you did?
What'd I do?
You subbed.
Oh, yeah, I did, didn't I?
You're dropping subs all over our channel.
3 months in a row.
Yeah, what's wrong with now? You?
Throwing them pennies out there like I own the place.
Indeed. But it is an odd-numbered episode, which means party cast time. Purnell and Chris, you're both here. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great.
Don't everybody talk at once. Shit.
I was gonna say I was waiting on him to go first, and I was like, okay, I guess it's my turn.
I was trying to be courteous. See, we were so what happened.
Oh, you guys.
Niceties on this show.
Kid.
Fuck on out of here.
I'm sleeping. Wait, hey, we can be courteous sometimes. We can be gentle folk. I mean,
fuck that.
It gives you moral superiority.
Well, I'm not going to complain about that. Not having that shit. Gimme. Fuck all y'all. I'm morally superior.
So, Purnell, I want you to know I've been thinking of you with your diet and cutting down on soda. I found a strawberry lemonade sun-kissed soda.
What, as in like canned and bottled, or is it like one of those things where like certain restaurants will let you get out of like the Coke remix machine?
Canned, baby.
Wow. So you got to take a
drink
picture
in a can.
Of that.
It's on stream you don't visit the stream because you're too cool for Twitch. Uh-huh.
That's right. Moral superiority, bitch. But like, I still will drink soda here and there. Like if I come across a weird flavor, I'll buy it. Like I just had the cinnamon Coke the other day because I had to see what that was about.
What'd you think of that?
Total meh. It was like more like cinnamon. Nope. I just wasn't feeling it. And that's the sad thing, because you would think cinnamon and a soda would be good. Like, it just seems like it would make sense. And I'm sitting there drinking, it's like, is it bad enough to pour it on the drain? No, it's freaking sugar. Of course I'm going to drink it. But
I paid good money for this unhealthiness.
Exactly. You know, I'm not going to just pour it out, but would I go out and buy it again with my own money? Probably not. And I got to say, there's something to be said about that, too, because typically when I think of, like, say, flavored sodas, just that kind of stuff, I am sometimes concerned about if I can even ever dislike it, because, like I said earlier, it's all sugar. It's all just, like, carbonated sugar, syrups. So I just feel like my brain will just magically attach itself to any of them. So to have one makes me go, not really. Not feeling this. It makes me feel like, okay, my taste buds still kind of function. I'm not a slave to the sugar. I have discerning taste in carbonated drinks. And this is proof, as I don't buy more cinnamon Coke. But I do want to try that drink that you were talking about, though.
Hell yeah, man. It is delicious. Strawberry lemonade sun-kissed. I found it at Walmart. I saw it, and I'm like, oh my God, that looks delicious. We have to try it.
I wonder if it may be one of those cases where it's actually exclusive to Walmart.
Who knows?
Because, I mean, I was at the store the other day looking at, like, in the beverage aisle. I didn't see anything crazy like that. I would have probably grabbed it then.
I don't know.
Oh, no, you know. You're just keeping it to yourself. Keeping it a secret. I'm hip to
that
you.
That could be it. It's all mine, Purnell. All mine, and you're never going to have any.
Well, maybe. What if you just don't pour some into the computer? It'll just transmit over. And I can just like,
let me plug a cable into it and see if that works.
Just transmit it over my way. I can just taste it through the waves. That'll be nifty.
Awesome Prime says, try milky coffee beer called Magic Beer. Interesting.
Ew. Beer. Well, that is three things I don't like.
because you'll be bouncing off the damn walls after you drank it, but I would do it.
Milky coffee beer. That sounds really, I don't know, unhealthy? Dangerous?
It's a downer plus an upper. You kind of, you can't lose.
Or it's a stalemate. You
can, I don't know.
But oh, he said he made it up. God damn it, Prime.
He made it up, but let's be honest here. That does exist. It's just not called milky coffee beer or whatever they call it, but I am positive there are coffee beers that also throw some cream in it. It would be like a coffee stout. That's pretty much what it would be. A coffee cream stout.
Yeah.
I bet it exists.
Probably. If I could drink strawberry lemonade soda, then I'm sure that coffee beer exists.
Like coffee beer normal, I know it because I've had it before, specifically that milky coffee combination. The fact that it's got to have the creaminess of it. That's the one I'm not sure of, but I would wager it does. Because they make beer out of every damn thing. And it almost never tastes like the thing they say it is. Milky coffee stout.
Well, you're not sure about it, but you know what I'm sure about?
Segways.
Yes, that we have some good games to talk about this episode.
Or do we?
Yeah. I would hope they're good. I mean, I know Chris enjoyed at least one of his.
Yeah.
I hope so. Did someone hate their game? We'll find out, maybe, perhaps.
That worries me. Hopefully there's no bad games, but I guess we'll find out.
He's going to spend the whole episode like, is this the one?
Is this the shitty one? Oh, fuck, is this the shitty one? Oh, God, is this the shitty one?
I just wanted to make you worry.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a bad one. I could tell there's going to be a bad one this episode.
It's game roulette. It could be any game.
It could be. It's almost like we record out of order.
Spoiler alert.
Spoilers indeed. It's up to the viewers and the listeners to decide which one is the bad one. We'll maybe. Never know. Or will we?
Let's find out.
Or let's find out. Indeed. Let's find out, because the first game to talk about tonight is called Romancing Saga 3, code provided to us by Square Enix for the purpose of this review. I have to say it, even though every game we cover on the show is given to us for review on the show. Developed and published by Square Enix, released November 11th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, Vita, and PC for $28.99, because Square's got to be weird with their prices. Once every 300 years, the rise of Morastrum threatens the existence of our world. All born in that year are doomed to perish before its end. However, there came a time when a soul child did survive. He was using the power of death to conquer the world, yet one day he vanished. Another 300 years passed, and again a child defied fate. She became known as the Matriarch. It has been 300 odd years since the disappearance of the Matriarch. Humanity now stands at the fulcrum between hope and despair. Will there be another child of destiny? Purnell, tell us.
Before that, I gotta ask, what? The earlier thing you were like, gotta say it before the thing, I started adding it, like, I don't remember that. It happened. Like, what? Just one day, it's like, I'm gonna start saying this. All right, I don't want to derail this too much. I'll just bug you about it later.
Okay, so, that works.
Romancing Saga 3. So, for those who are familiar with retro RPGs, the Saga RPG series was a franchise of RPGs that Square was putting out pretty much exclusively in Japan, with a few exceptions that came over here on the Game Boy under the name of Final Fantasy Legend. And even those, though experimental, which the Saga series was well known for, even those didn't play in the way that Romancing Saga does. Eventually, we did get a Saga game on the PS1 called Saga Frontier, which is more along the lines of what Romancing Saga 3 is, though I would say it's a bit more refined than that, because, of course, Romancing Saga 3 is older than that. But I wanted to just lay that on the table for folks who know about that game to kind of have like a boilerplate. And for those who don't, well, here we go. Romancing Saga 3 puts you in the shoes of pretty much one of eight different characters that all fulfill roles within the grand story as a whole. And when you choose one of those characters, you will find yourself using them as your main character. So you'll be experiencing the story from the perspective of that person, including the people they meet. If the story branches off where that character goes off with a group of people and the other guys do not go with them, you'll experience the story from their perspective. So it's a good excuse to kind of just play the game multiple times to see the entire saga unfold across all of the characters. So, you freaking know. Now, this game is, I want to say it's a traditional RPG, but in reality, it's anything but, which is a large part of where I think my final result, my final perspective is going to be, in that if you typically think of how RPGs work, most of those tropes may well not apply to this game. For example, there are no levels. You don't level up in this game. You don't get experience points in this game. Combat is done by way of setting your characters up into formations. Formations being just like layouts of where your characters are positioned on the battlefield, which determines various buffs. Like maybe they'll get more attack power, more speed on the battlefield, stuff like that. And when you fight, you can equip a variety of different weapons, like a sword or an axe or a club or whatever. And the different families of weapons have their own like stat, like level one in swords, level two in axes, whatever. And when you use it in battle, you have, well, actually, I'll go on to that part in a second. But as you use attacks in combat, you have the chance of unlocking through inspiration a new attack with that weapon type. So you might be swinging a spear and suddenly, boom, your character gets inspired and now you can use a sweep action and that's the new attack that they've got. Once you've used that attack enough times, you will then learn it to memory. And then any character in your party can equip that new attack. It's almost like that character is teaching everyone else in the party, here's how I did the sweep attack. Thanks, bro. I knew you had it in you, whatever. However, it's all RNG. You have no idea when these attacks are going to be learned. You just kind of do. I don't know if it's learned based on level of the attack or if the strength of the monster or what. It just kind of happens eventually. The stronger your, I do believe that the stronger your, or the higher your weapon level is, the more damage you'll do with the weapon. Your stats, they change in different ways. So I know from my play that hit points and your attack points, which is pretty much all your skills, they can level up after combat. But it's randomly generated. You don't know when they'll level up and for who. You just kind of have to fight battles, win, and hope I unlock something. Hope I get a level up. So you'll be fighting battles with the hope of increasing the experience for your hit points or your attack points. Now, something else that's a big deal and worth pointing out in this game is that typical RPGs, you have your hit points, and when you run out of hit points, you are dead until someone uses a revive spell on you or a Phoenix down or something. Mm-hmm. But that's not how this game works. This game has hit points and then life points. Every battle, you start with full hit points. That refills for you every battle, which is great. However, if you run out of life hit points in battle, you will lose one life point and get knocked down. If you don't get healed by a player or another character, and the enemy decides to attack you again, you'll get hit for another life point. You run out of life points, you're dead. You're dead. There's no resurrection, whatever. I don't know if there's like a permadeath there because I wasn't getting that far. I was making sure to refill my crap, but I do know that that's pretty much a bad thing. You don't want to run out of life points because you're not getting back up. There's no like throw a bomb at the guy to get up.
Yeah, so you don't want to risk that. Just like, oh well, I'm reviewing a game. Let me see if I just die for good.
Like, never want to. That's the thing about me, and I probably got to get better at that. I suck at tempting fate, even for reviews. I'm going to find out. I'm just going to play well. Screw it.
I just want to beat the game. I don't want to die.
Exactly. What happens when you screw up? You figure it out, buddy. I'm too good at this. I'm not trying to die. But so I never ran out of life points, but I do know that's a bad thing to run out of life points. So don't do that. The game itself is an interesting bubble, too, because whereas a lot more traditional RPGs and present-day RPGs give you a more linear story to follow with events that take place and you go from one bit to the next, this game, while it does have story bits and there is a full narrative to take in, you'll probably spend more time wandering into side quests and just doing whatever the hell you're going to do. Because whenever you go to a place, you'll start talking to people in the towns, and the people in towns will typically tell you stuff. And when they tell you things, they unlock side quests that you can take on. And there's a lot of them. Like, for example, you might come across a guy that says, hey, there's a forest up north with tons of crazy monsters. I will give you money for those guys. And then you're like, okay. And you go out to the map, bam, and there's a forest you can go to. And there's monsters to fight there and kidnap. So you can go do that. Of course, therein lies another hiccup with the game, which not so much a hiccup, it's just a trait, which is that you don't really know without an FAQ whether certain quests will keep you from fulfilling other requests or not. And here's another example related to what I just said. Guy says, hey, there's a forest up north with crazy monsters. I'll pay you money if you can go get them for me. And you're like, sure, whatever. So you go to the forest, kill a monster, take it back, sell them for money. Then later on, someone tells you there's a professor who lives in that forest. And you're like, okay, I want to see what the professor's got to say. And then she's like, hey, you know, I lost four monsters out in the woods. If you'd be so kind as to bring them back for me. You're like, oh, yeah, that monster I just sold to that guy in town. Yeah, I can't fulfill that quest anymore. But you have no way of knowing that unless you just, you know, paralyze yourself from actually fulfilling the original one until you just do everything. So you'll be fumbling around a lot and experiencing stuff via trial and error and then carving your own path through the game until eventually either you've capped an FAQ or you've just decided from previous experience, I'm going to fulfill this. I'm going to do these things for this playthrough with this character and see what happens. Yes, it is, because you have the eight different characters. Certain characters can access certain side quests that others can't. Certain characters will go on side treks for the story that other characters won't be with them on because they're off doing something different. You know, the type. It's like multiple, like, it's like they're all into the same conclusion, but they're getting there via different pathways. And it's kind of nice in that regard. I don't want to ramble too much on this game, but what I will say is that this is a different type of RPG in that I personally like it, though it might stem from the fact that I was a fan of the Saga games that were trickling over here anyway. I was a huge doper for freaking Saga Frontier, despite the fact that game didn't explain a damn thing to you when you were playing it. You just kind of figured a lot of it out when you played, including the fact that you unlocked team attacks and, you know, your different weapon moves and whatnot. There's no that's same like with this game, but older. So I would say that when it comes to this title, your flavor will really stem from what your school of RPGs are coming from. If you're interested in some, you know, not quite SNES, but, you know, SNES mobile-fied slightly sprites with some, I don't even want to call it archaic gameplay because it's really weird, but like different and non-traditional gameplay elements. And a game that doesn't necessarily just tell you everything you need to do and what you need to know to min-max it. I think this game is on point and it's worth your time to try because there's not really any games on the market that play like this does in the JRPG genre. However, in the event that you are a traditional RPG player or JRPG player and you want a narrative just to plow through, you want to just kill a guy, level up and just get stronger as you play and not have to think about what you're doing, this may not be the game for you because, again, I kind of consider that a high wall of entry in that regard. Like, you don't want to just experiment with this. This is the game you come to after you're already well seasoned. It's like, now I want to try this weird thing out and see how it goes. So,
yeah, the Saga games have always been like the unique RPG in the RPG genre.
Very much so. And that's what makes them special. So it's like, it's one of those where you can't really recommend it to everybody, but I'm glad you can't because that's what makes it special. That's what makes it unique. You know, Final Fantasy is like, do you like RPGs with the letter J in front of them? Then you should be playing these. Saga games, like, I don't know. It's like Final Fantasy's weird stepbrother. I don't know. But that's how I genuinely feel about it. I feel like it's worth a play. It's pretty much worth a play if you're a seasoned RPG player looking for stuff. But if you're not, and let it be passed and just move on to something more traditional until you're ready to experiment. You need more gateway RPGs.
Well, works for me. And thanks again to Square Enix for providing the code for the purpose of that review. Again, $29, your official verdict.
Buy it in the event that you're down with the experimentation and some crazy stuff from the retro age. deny in the event that you are just like, I want to throw this money at this game and see, because last thing you want is a bunch of people who aren't ready for this going on in the forum. This is the worst game I've ever played in my life. It's so stupid. I don't even know how to get magic in it. You buy it from the shops, by the way. You buy it from clerks. Anyway, yeah.
Spoilers, I like Jesus.
Buy it from random shop clerks.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Black Future 88, developed by Super Scary Snakes, published by Gambitious, released November 21st on the Switch and PC for $19.99. Black Future 88 is a synth-punk roguelike 2D action shooter. Vertically climb an always-evolving procedural tower to reach the top and kill its insane owner before your heart explodes. Shoot, slash, dash, and upgrade yourself to survive the endless waves of deadly traps, homicidal AI, and the colossal warden standing in your way in a stylish alternate version of 1988. Chris, tell us about Black Future 88.
Black Future 88. Okay. I just had to say it once. I feel like
we should have synth music playing during this review.
How black is it?
Wait a minute. Here we go. Oh, wait. Ah, crap. It's the loading screen. I was going to play the music from the game.
Wow.
Thwarted by load screens.
Okay. So, Black Future 88. For one, I want to give an early shout out to the title screen, just because instead of saying press any button or press whatever, it says press anything. I just like that. Like, I push down on this rubber band and it accesses my game. Great. But yeah. So this is a game. The plot for which is, I guess, the world kind of got messed up in 1988 to the point where, like, they just don't even, like, the society kind of collapsed, and like technology fails, and like, you know, even like the clocks don't work anymore, or something like that, and like the sun got blotted out by like perpetual rain clouds, so nobody has any idea what day or time it is, so they just stopped counting. So it's actually in the distant future, but they just still call it 1988 because that's the year that the whole thing happened.
That works.
Yeah. Last year anyone was aware of. Yeah, I like that. That's all the story you get. Literally, they explain that for you in the intro, and then you are just in a building. And as you go through, this old guy kind of taunts you about things, and so that's presumably the big bad guy. You don't really have time to figure out much in the way of the story, because as the game stipulates in the description there, you do have a timer that is set at 18 minutes, and when it hits zero, you're dead. If you have not beaten the game, then you're going to have to start over. So it is it's a roguelike. I guess you could call it a roguelite. Let's call it a light, because it does start you over with this. You know, you can choose from two characters initially, and then you unlock three more characters that are, you know, silhouettes until you gain enough levels. But, you know, you pick one or two characters. Those characters have two weapons each, and you basically just get into this tower and start getting attacked by robots and guards and things like that. It's a platformer. It's kind of like a single room platformer. None of the rooms are very large. Funny enough, the only thing I can immediately think of to compare the room sizes to is Bubble Bobble 2. In okay. That it's about the size of four full screens. And you have, you know, each one will have one, two, three other exits, each one in a corner of the screen. And obviously, no matter what, like, as again, they're procedurally generated, and you know, you can go to the side, but generally up is the way you want to go because you have to reach the top of the building. However, there is some virtue in exploring a little, because in those rooms you might face different challenges or whatever, but you might actually grab a a different weapon, which might be in a golden suitcase that like appears, or maybe you might get a power up, or maybe it might be a merchant. You earn money as you defeat enemies, and thus you can actually like purchase some stuff that is kind of randomized, like everything else. But here's the thing. So you have a life bar on top of your 18-minute timer, so obviously if you get hit too many times, you die. And once you die or end the run in some other way, it basically takes all of the stuff that you encountered and adds them to like this kind of this, what do you call it? I want to say thesaurus, but that's not true at all.
Codex.
A codex. Thank you.
I was going to say that's glossary.
That's also true, but codex is the word they use.
Good job, so Cole.
Yep.
I knew you were here for a reason.
I have my moments.
So it adds it to the thesaurus, and and once it's in there, then any time that you start another run, that weapon will, you know, randomly appear at some point, or it may be unlocked in the shop, and so, you know, it'll be more present once you've found it once, you know? And, of course, as you proceed through the game and get further and further, you get better and better stuff that'll end up being unlocked, and some of it might be available, like, within the first room at that point. So it's really interesting, because there's a huge amount of weapons, and they're not just your standard fare. Like, they've got, you know, the machine gun, you know, shotgun style, you know, all kinds of, like, you know, melee weapons, of course, abound. But they have other interesting guns, too. Like, there's a gun that shoots the enemy, and then when you hit an enemy with the gun, it switches places with you and the enemy. So when you shoot an enemy, you're now in the enemy's place, and they're in your place.
Interesting.
Or dead. Yeah. There's a gun that shoots money. There's a, which is pretty great.
Take that to the strip club.
On the character right there.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, you know, really interesting. And of course, each of them have limited ammo, except the melee weapons and the and certain pistols will have infinite ammo. That doesn't really matter because ammo drops are abundant in this game. Because again, they're wanting you to move fast. This is not a survival style game. This is just, you know, just try to keep a cool head about it. So So the thing about it, and again, this is something I really like, is that instead of just dropping you into this tower and giving you no direction, they actually will always have a skull, kind of a skull pointing or kind of laid over the door that is going to most quickly lead to the next boss.
Mm.
And as you defeat the bosses, of course, that's getting you in the right direction. The bosses are randomized, but they, you know, it's the same pool of bosses. So, you know, if you haven't figured out this one boss before, you know, and you run into him, then that might end your run right there. Or you might luck out and get an easier boss. They're all fairly, you know, easy. But anyways, so the action of this game is actually really interesting, too. This is something I haven't really seen in a lot of these run and guns. So, of course, you have the standard fare, like the double jump, and, you know, you have a dash move that will get you either up, either vertically or horizontally, in another place very quickly, like quick enough that you can actually dodge bullets. And the bullets come at you in that kind of slow bullet hell way, like it's a bunch of them, but like they're actually manageable. Which I, of course, enjoy. And if you have a melee weapon, oftentimes you can, like, actually cut through, like, swaths of bullets on your way over to the enemy. Which is, of course, great, because that also cuts down on your time. But the way you shoot enemies is that you either press the Y button and it will target the nearest enemy automatically, or you can just use the right stick to do kind of a twin-stick shooter style where you can just shoot in any direction. And, you know, when you push the stick towards, you know, when you point the stick towards an enemy, then it will shoot in that direction. So I like that it has both of those. So yeah, like there's just basically like, beyond that, it's like mostly about the aesthetic. It's like this thing is absolutely stunningly gorgeous, like pixel art, which I'm starting to wonder how all of these game companies are knocking it out of the park with this pixel art. I've seen so much good pixel art on the Switch. It's ridiculous. But it's got that. It's also got, like, you know, the neon lights, like, against a really dark background kind of stuff. And, like, you know, I'm not sure if it reminds me of the 80s. I was very young when the 80s ended. But it definitely has like that, you know, cyberpunk aesthetic, which is kind of cool. And yeah, again, it's just basically a race to the top against the clock and, you know, kind of hoping. Well, you know, of course, you can choose your loadout by choosing a certain character. I really like the second character, Sigrist, who has a sword. Like, I actually really like the melee combat in this game.
Nice.
But yeah, it's really you know, it's really difficult. Obviously, not just due to the timer, but also due to the fact that, you know, there's lots of bullets. Bosses are hard but pattern based, so, you know, of course you can memorize them, and, you know, that's all very typical for this genre. But what I do like is that in the options menu, it actually gives you assist mode, which allows you to do a slowdown attack, or sorry, a slowdown thing where you can just slow down the action, and it also allows you to take a lot less damage from certain attacks. So, like, you know, it, but they tell you, they're like, well, this game's good because it's hard, so we recommend you don't use this mode, but we don't want to lock people who, you know, aren't super good at video games out of playing this.
I like games that do that. It seems that we're seeing that a lot more lately, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's accessibility, you know?
Yeah.
For people who appreciate the rad, like, you know, hardcore fast action, but, you know, they just can't hang with like running gun shooters like what we've all been playing for 20 years or 30. It also has, in the display settings, like, you can actually change the HUD scale, so you can actually make the text large and readable.
Nice.
Although it does make everything so large that it kind of blocks out your character sometimes. You can't set the opacity. But God's sakes, this thing by default has tiny, tiny text. And I was really glad. I was about to make, like, just list that as a complaint. And then I saw the setting. I was like, oh, okay. Actually, they fixed it.
Nice.
Already. So I like that it has that. The other thing is that it has camera shake and camera punches. So, of course, the camera will shake when you take damage if you have that on. And the camera punches is, like, basically where the camera, like, zooms in really violently when you shoot something. Just for review's sake, I turned it all the way up, and it actually made me kind of sick. It punches so hard.
Oh, Lord.
So don't set that option too high. Like, keep it in the middle, if anything. I'm going to turn it all the way off. And I'm the kind, I don't shirk at, like, first person things or anything like that. So I was like, wow, this is making me uncomfortable.
Now I want to try this game just to see that.
Right. It's pretty intense.
Did you have any trouble with the brightness from the bloom? Did you have to turn it down?
Nah, I mean, the bloom wasn't so bad, but, you know, you could turn it reduced or off, and, mm-hmm. You know, if you turn it on normal, that's basically super high.
Yeah. But, I know I watched somebody play it, and the flashing lights and all the bright neon colors. I don't have epilepsy, but there are times where I'm just like, that's a lot, and that makes me nauseated.
Yeah.
And watching somebody play it, I was like, I had to look away until they went into the settings and turned the bloom down.
Yeah, you can turn it entirely off. So yeah. That's not a problem. You can make it totally flat. Yeah, the other thing is background separation. So you can make the backgrounds seem more flat, which helps some people. Because, yeah, I know sometimes with those extreme backgrounds, it's like it can be a little much to have them constantly, you know, zooming around. No. So this game really, I like the steps that this game took to take care of its player. So I really appreciate all. That's why I'm spending some time on these options, because I like to see this in games, and I hope more developers do this stuff.
Yeah. Well, as it stands, $20 on Black Future 88. What's your verdict?
$20 is actually the perfect price for something like this. I mean, it's up there in the, you know, Dead Cells, Blasphemous, like, you know, kill everything and, you know, try and, is basically, you know, a hardcore roguelike kind of game that, you know, people are going to want to pick up and play time again. I didn't really find any true weaknesses here. You know, there's really not anything not to like, as long as you're cool with, like, the kind of dark cyberpunk 80s aesthetic. But I mean, that's hugely popular right now. This is one that definitely will keep you coming back for more. And like I said, the fact that it does have a hard timer on your character, whether you win or lose, is like, you know, it does make it interesting, and it does kind of resolve you to the fact that you're going to be playing this for, you know, many, many times. And yeah, the whole game changes, like, because you keep unlocking stuff every time you die and, you know, level up several times. Like, every level unlocks a new thing.
Nice.
So, yeah, I mean, I really, really enjoyed this experience, and I think it's worth it.
Awesome. Hopefully it comes to more platforms in the future. I would love to check this out on Xbox.
Yeah, bring it to Xbox.
And PlayStation. Bring it everywhere.
Yeah, fuck it.
Bring it to Stadia.
There you go.
Oh, God.
All right.
What is the new Apple games?
Oh, Apple Arcade.
Yeah.
It might be on Apple Arcade. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Baobab's Mausoleum Episode 3, Un Pato en Muerto Burgo, which I believe stands for A Duck in Deathburg.
Probably,
that
is, yeah.
That may be the record for longest title we've had this year.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's definitely in tradition with Baobab's Mausoleum's like titles. The first episode is called Ovnifagos Don't Eat Flamingos.
So it's Baobab's?
I guess it's Baobab's. I don't know. There's no voice acting. There's no way to pronounce it, and it's a made-up word. So
true.
Ovnifagos is a made-up word, too.
Anyway, developed by Celery Emblem, which is a great company name, published by Zero Uno Games, released November 21st on the Switch for $5.99. Here comes the final episode, full of sordid stays in limbo, golf courses watched over by enchilada-shaped clouds, trips to the internet of the marinas, and a final outcome with a high risk of causing you very negative effects, both in the eyesight and in the brain. The final episode is here to make you completely crazy. Chris, this sounds batshit crazy. What is it?
It is. Okay, so I have to give a little history here. I purchased episode 1 and episode 2, and I literally only requested episode 3 because it's only a $6 game. Normally, I don't request games when they're that cheap. But I literally requested it just so I could talk about this series because which I have
is
to.
A good That's reason a good way to want to cover a game.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, Baobab's Mausoleum. I like Baobab's. I don't know.
By the way, Root Beer is My Jam says Baobab is not made up.
Oh, it's not made up. Okay, what is it?
Oh, he didn't say.
Come on, you got to give me more than that.
I'm Googling it.
Okay.
While it's being Googled, tell us about the game.
Okay, it's so the... Huh?
It's a plant. It's a tree.
Oh, okay. Well, cool. Yeah. Is Ovnifago a thing? O-V-N-I-F-A-G-O?
O-V... Say the rest?
I just spelled it in chat.
Huh.
Okay. Well, while we're looking that up. So, Baobab's Mausoleum basically follows the adventure of a vampire eggplant who works for the FBI. His name is Watrasio Walpurgis. That's I'm guessing at the pronunciation there too. And in episode 1 he crashes his car into this town that's rumored to only be able to be found on, like, I forget what it is, like the 11th day of March at exactly like this time or whatever, and he happens to crash there. And you know, episode 1 kind of deals with him learning about the place and like how to get help and how to try and get out of there. And eventually, he befriends and becomes enamored with a girl who is kidnapped at the end of episode 1. And then at the end of episode 2, episode 2 deals with him like trying to find her in the same town, of course. And episode 3, well, it's hard to talk about without spoiling episode 2. But let's say episode 3 starts off with him getting his head blown off by the shotgun.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So
the end.
Exactly. But kind of, but not really. So, yeah, he get, like, the intro to this game is him getting murdered by a character who is not really explained, but who seems to be the antagonist or the person who kidnaps this girl. And... the interesting thing about this game is that it actually makes you control this character when he's on screen. So you actually have to do things like murder the hero, like when you're actually controlling his character. But I'm getting way ahead of myself. Generally, the game is a top-down, walking around adventure game type thing. So you basically walk around and talk to people and collect items. There's coins everywhere, but there's also like items that you need to solve puzzles. And if you get an item and you use it in the right place, then it will, you know, solve the puzzle and allow you to proceed. Like I said, it's all done in top-down pixel art style. But the thing about this game is that they never actually, like, at any point, this game can completely go off the rails and just throw you into this whole different thing that, like, you were not expecting. Most of the thrill of, like, all three chapters is just the surprises that are in store for you. Episode one has this thing where it, you know, chapter four starts off for no reason as a first-person view 3D game, and because your character is constantly smoking, like, you're looking through his eyes and all you can see is the cigarette. And I really like that. And then you have to, like, do, like, these quests in a 3D game that looks like One More Dungeon, which is, you know, one I reviewed a while ago. So it, like, looks pixelated, but it's actually voxelated and, you know, things like that. And then it just puts you right back into 2D mode. Well, this game actually starts off with something I've never seen before in video games, which is, you know, of course, that's always a delight, but I've kind of grown used to that in this trilogy. So as soon as he's murdered, they go into an interlude where it's basically you can, so you know those old, like, MS-DOS or, like, even, like, Sega CD games where it's, like, real footage that you move around in by choosing, like, a path to go in, and then you get to watch the camera do this filmed motion, going to the next area. It's that, except that it's just somebody's, like, home video. Somebody just got a camera and filmed themselves walking around and stuff and put that into the game. With just a real-ass eggplant with sunglasses on it. And they're just, like, holding it up and moving around and stuff. And you just get to choose where they move and, like, what they do. If you choose wrong, it just honks at you. And then if you, you know, choose the right thing, and then it keeps going.
Nothing you say makes any sense about this game.
And
I'm so confused.
And yet I'm describing it without going into the weird parts. So, like, I didn't mention that each of these scenes has a person standing around with a plastic bag over their face. Like, that's a thing.
Oh, my God.
But anyways, so once you do that, then, of course, you get to guide your eggplant vampire FBI agent through heaven, where you have to solve the most ridiculous puzzle that literally took me an hour just to figure out what to do. And once I figured it out, I was like, that is the stupidest thing in the world. And then it got me back into the game where I could walk around and talk to people, so I forgave it. But I was seriously like, I can't believe I'm about to have to toss in this review, like, after the first puzzle. Anyway, and of course, this is a new game, so there's no game facts whatsoever. let's just say you have to match up some things by doing some things with your cigarette, which, by the way, can shoot flames out of it or ice with his ice cigarettes. You actually obtain these items in the other games, and then you carry them over into chapter three. But, you know, that gives it a little bit of a shooter element. Sometimes you fight giant screen-sized bosses, you know, just for fun. But in this one, you actually have to take a giant screen-sized boss battle in a whole different direction that I won't spoil because it's a puzzle solution. But it's just more of a puzzle than a boss this time. But anyways, yeah, once he gets down to Earth, then, yeah, you run around this golf course, which is basically kind of the stand-in for the town. Usually it's walking around the town. It's like if you think about Mother 3, where you just keep coming back to the town and everybody's just in a different position or different, like something has changed. That's kind of how this game treats it. And yeah, then you get into a thing where you have to, good Lord, how to describe this. You have to go onto a golf course, and the game changes yet again, where you have to drive around on a monster golf cart that has, like, this big mouth in the front, and you have to run over sheep that have burritos for faces, but only the golden ones.
What the?
And it's one of the most frustrating things in the world because it's a golf cart that only has front wheel drive. So if it turns over, you're done. You have to reset the whole chapter and get it started again. Oh, and it's so hard to drive, and it's so, like, you know, the controls are just wrecked. And you have to go, like, underwater and over hills and all this other stuff. And, you know, you get a map that at least shows you where, like, your next target is. Like, you get a little arrow that you can do. And then it's all done, of course, in 3D, like this kind of, and I don't, you know, you do that and then, you know, you move on and stuff. And I was just, like, going through that. It was so frustrating. But the game, like, the thing about it is that this game keeps switching things up on you.
Dark Mika, I feel like I've had a stroke listening to this.
I know, and yet I can't make it any clearer than this. The thing about this game is that you do all of this because it's, like, one absurd situation after another. And, like I said, they keep a whole chapter could start and it could be like a completely different game than what you were playing before. And then it just goes right back to it. But the game is so funny. Like, it's funny in this absurd way. Like, it's kind of, schlocky horror, like, imagery and a really good soundtrack that I'm going to get to, actually. It's all about, like, these funny jokes and, like, things that happen. And it's, like, it's so interesting, but it kind of requires you to be a total weirdo to appreciate it. For instance, like, even in the dialogue, it's like they'll make things like, you know, they'll do things like make references to video games. Like, there's literally a character that when you talk to them, all they do is go on a tangent about why Super Mario Land 3 is called Wario Land.
Oh, geez.
And, like, why Wario's not in the other games then or whatever. Like, it's just this whole thing. And the writing itself is just peppered with misspellings and, like, sometimes the wrong word. And the people who made this game, I think that it's a South American or Central American studio. I didn't really do my research there, but it's not just badly translated. It's purposely badly written. Like, you can tell. And yet all of this just gives it this charm that, like I said, I played through the first two chapters and I had to see what would happen in chapter three. And once I did, I was like, this is actually a great game that kind of defies you to like it. Because they throw every bad thing they can at you. And yet you're just kind of like, you know, if you're of a certain mindset, you can just hang with it. And, I played it all the way through the end. I've actually beaten the entire trilogy, and I'm going back through again to try and pick up collectibles from the first game. You know, every game has, of course, a number of coins that you can collect, upon which it gives you an achievement. It also has these other items that you can collect where it says you'll get a really good thing if you collect all these. And I haven't yet on any of the games because they're very hard to find. And, like, there's at least 12 different achievements for each one, and they don't tell you what they are or how to get them.
So, oh, Lord.
Yeah. This game is just like this Dadaist kind of exploration into, like, a weirdo noir genre thing, and yet it also just messes with you when you have expectations about it as a video game. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's a bad game that makes you love it.
Well, it's hard to just review a third episode, so tell us, on the whole series, is this worth picking up?
Yes. You definitely don't pick up episode 3 by itself.
Start at 1 and work through it.
You do have to start at 1 because they really all three play together as a cohesive whole. And, like, that's the thing, is I can't just pass this off as being like that PlayStation game LSD emulator or whatever, like, where it's just like a bad acid trip applied to a video game. It's not just an art piece. Like, there's actually a cohesive narrative and it actually has gameplay. But what I'm, you know, the thing is, if you go in expecting it to be like a weird, you know, like a really good game wrapped in weirdness, like, I don't know, an Earthbound or something like that, you're not going to get too far in this one. It, in fact, doesn't have too much in the way of combat on any of the games. Each game has about one boss fight and maybe one area where you have to dodge things or fight things. Mostly it's walking around and experiencing the thing. Which is why I kind of call it more of like an experience for people who like weird experiences than like a cohesive video game. But yeah, you do have to get all three of them. And I do recommend it actually for people who followed the review this far and are still like, maybe.
Mel, you sold me on it. Dark Mika, go ahead and check it. Dark Mika doesn't seem as sold. She said, work through it like working through a stroke that this game will give you, just like the review likely gave you one.
Well, all I'm doing is describing the game as honestly as I can. And again, without going into the too weird stuff, because I prefer that to be a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even want to go into, like, yeah. There's things I didn't want to go into on it because it's so much better if you just experience it. But it is definitely a fever dream of a game. And and the first two chapters, actually, they went on sale for real cheap before episode 3 came out. So I'm thinking that they'll probably either get bundled together at some point or, you know, they'll become cheap enough that you can just buy all three in one go. But even as an $18 experience, you know, for $6 for all three, I would recommend it for people who have an odd sensibility about them.
Yeah, I might have to check that one out myself. It seems just batshit crazy, and I have to experience it.
I definitely think you personally would love it.
All right, well, based on that recommendation, I'll pick it up after the show.
Sweet.
Cool. Next game to talk about is called Woodle Tree 2 Deluxe Plus, developed and published by Chubby Pixel, released November 22nd on PS4 for $12.99. This time, a new menace is taking over the woodlands with a black substance that is absorbing life and energy from all living creatures. Will you be skilled enough to help Woodle in his quest to repel this enormous new evil force? Purnell, tell us about it.
I don't know if I want to now, because I need you to promise you'll buy it right after the show.
I already have it on Xbox.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, in that case, Woodle. Let me stop. Now, this game, it surprised me, I want to say, because this may be a little bit of prejudice bias eking out, but I was kind of expecting it to be a dud. This was one of those trick take reviews. Yeah, I'll review it. This is going to suck. It actually didn't. It's actually nice. Woodle is a log boy with a leaf, and his task is to explore a honestly rather vast world and locate water drops that I suppose are magical to resurrect the sage trees that exist in his hometown to drive back, quote-unquote, the darkness.
What else is magical besides water drops? Awesome Prime dropping 21 biddies.
Dropping biddies!
Twinkle, twinkle, baby!
Yeah. Thank you, Prime, for the biddies. This is going to be one of those episodes where people just drop individual bits and kill the stream again, isn't it?
Mayhaps.
Good.
2 years in, you've explained it. I still don't know what the hell a biddy is. But Woodle, basically, it's like, think of this as like sort of like a 3D action platformer, a la the Mario style game, but more of it's a slower pace, but equally technical in a number of areas for platforming aspects. Woodle can run, he can jump, he can double jump, he can wall jump. He can't cartwheel, though. And basically, the whole idea is he runs around the world looking for these water drops. Now, when enemies show up on the screen, which sometimes are just normal guys walking around that are just flavor characters on the map, but if it's an enemy, you can use the button to swing your leaf and do damage to them, eventually killing them. Or you can hold the button down to charge up a wind bullet and throw it. You'll rarely want to do that, though, because good freaking luck aiming the wind bullets. I sucked at it and quickly gave up unless I had to hit a switch or something. As you move around the map, you will come across a few types of collectibles. Not many, but enough. Specifically, red berries and blueberries. Red berries are red, and they're very common, and I think they even respawn after certain points in the game. Blueberries are unique. You find them, and that's it. But they both work as currency to be spent at different shops in the main town area. Red berries typically provide cosmetics or the occasional sub ability, like a parasol lets you fall slower, or a bunch of masks, which will increase your attack power, masks/hats, which can increase your attack power, or your defense power, or whatever. The blueberries can be used to buy upgrades to your abilities. For example, and by far the most important one, spoiler, the freaking triple jump. Buy that as soon as possible, because screw everything. You just want it. You want it. And I'll tell you why shortly. Because early on in the game, it seems like a rather, low frills, no stakes. You can play this platform with your kids. Nothing really screws with you. This is a very easy game. But there are certain segments that I've come across that remind me of Super Mario Sunshine, the areas in that game where you didn't have the water pack, which means you could not use your abilities to finesse your jumps. In this game, the finessing ability is the means of which to use your leaf to float when you're descending from a jump. So you're in the air, you're descending, you can bring up the leaf, like I want to place myself on this platform to land easily enough. But on these weird levels I've come across, there will be sections where there's wind blowing. And when the wind is blowing, you are unable to use the leaf to hover and to slow your descent, which means you need to have precise jumps, which means you will screw them up a lot, a lot, a lot. I don't know if it was because of the actual game or because of my controller, but there was a particular section I got to where I spent, I swear I'm not making this up because it's embarrassing enough as it is, I spent about 2 hours trying to pull it off and could not freaking do it. I switched controllers to see if maybe my button was bad, because the button was bad, but I still couldn't do it because it was such a pain in the ass. But it's a testament to the fact that one way or the other, the platforming can get challenging. I just don't know whether it was the controls being a little dicey or the buttons timing being weird. But
drop it!
You don't want that triple jump. I can promise you that. It would make those areas light years better and easier for you. The music is an odd touch because it kind of fades in and fades out at different sections. And the music sounds good when it pops in. It's like nice, relaxing, soothing stuff. Nothing too stressful or frustrated, nothing to drive anxiety, but at the same time,
drives anxiety is Awesome Prime dropping more biddies into the cup and slowing down the stream again. Thank you, so Prime.
I wanted to also mention that.
Alright, get this right now. I also wanted to mention that one of the things you can buy in this game are upgrades to your leaf. There are blocks throughout the world that can be destroyed with your leaf, but only the proper leaf type can destroy the proper block. Now, what I thought was interesting is that you go up to the shop and you can buy leaves that you buy this leaf for 500 red berries, and it allows you to break green blocks and throw wind bullets that are larger. You can buy this one for 1,000 unless you break these two and throw larger leaf bullets. But given the fact that the best leaf lets you destroy every block and throws the largest bullets, I personally didn't see the point in buying the other leaves. I just figured it made more sense to save up and buy the best leaf and say screw the other ones. So I think that was kind of an odd design choice on their part, but it doesn't ruin the game. It just makes you feel like you can be economical and not spend a bunch of wasted berries on some lesser leaves, I'll call them.
Lesser leaves.
That's right. Lesser. It's almost like if you could go to play a Zelda game and rather than just find sword bits, you could just go to the shop and buy, the white sword or the master sword. And it's like, well, why the hell would I pay money for the white sword when the master sword is sitting right the frig there? I'm just going to save up and get the master sword. There's no point.
Yeah,
same
might as well.
Feeling comes from this game, but there's more leaves to skip. I like the fact that for as large as the world, like I said, the world is large. You'll be constantly losing direction, losing focus to go get one more berry that's sitting off in the distance that you want to get. Though, admittedly, they made a good choice in regards to the fact that though the world is large, there's a lot of warp nodes you can come across. And when you find those warp nodes, you can kind of teleport right to that spot if you want to, which allows the player to kind of just do what they want and go to the different areas of the map just to kind of wander around. And then if they feel like they're tired of that zone, just warp to another one and explore out in that direction and see what they find there. You're pretty much given free rein to go from the fire region to the snowy region to the beach region, as long as you've been to some area like that before and unlocked one of the warp nodes. I kind of appreciated that. One thing I do regret, though I guess it's not really a detriment to the game considering the fact that it's like bone cheap, is the fact that certain areas of the map feel a little more sparse than others. Like, you're not going to be getting like a lot of combat heavy fests. You might just be like, I'm going to run through here and grab these berries and then just keep running. Oh, there's a tree. What does the tree do? Nothing. Run past the tree. You know, like, there are going to be sections like that. But it didn't detract from the fact that I very much enjoyed the game, and I didn't feel as though traversing the map took too long. It was moving at a steady enough pace, especially with the run button, that I felt okay with progression. Also forgot to mention you get a wall jump, because that's important. But all in all, as odd as it may sound, this is another one of those cases of a game where people like to talk about, you know, games are bad now. This game sucks. This is the worst game I've ever played. I'm like, not really. I played this game. I think it's fun. I enjoyed it. It's cheap. If I'm looking for a platformer and I've played through Mario Odyssey, I could play this game and have a great time with it. I would know because I did it. And I could honestly recommend it to other people looking for action platformers. It's an unexpected like, and I'm fine with that.
Nice. So $13, your official verdict?
I think it's worth a purchase. Woodle is adorable and fun. Just don't buy crappy leaves. Only buy the ultimate leaf. Other than that, it's great.
Awesome. I guess I will have to pick this up because I just looked up on my Xbox. I have the original Woodle Tree Adventures, not 2. So that one is not on Xbox. This one is on PS4.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, definitely pick it up then. I will warn you, though, you ain't going to be getting no achievements easy in this game, though. There's a lot of blueberries to find.
That's okay. I got my 1,000 in the first game, so.
Dang.
I did. Well, I liked it. It was cute and it was fun. I enjoyed it.
I'm glad to hear that. I mean, I think you'll feel the same about this because I never played the first one, but I looked up images and stuff of it, and the vibe, like, guys, this is like a much bigger game. They actually took some criticisms to heart from the first game.
Nice. All right. Well, one last game to talk about with you guys is called Blue Kid 2, developed by Winterworks, published by Head Up Games, released November 19th on the Switch for $4.99. After rescuing his girlfriend from the hands of the evil wizard, Blue Kid and Pink Girl enjoy life with their newborn Pink Kid. But then a whole new adventure starts just out of the blue.
Blue Girl mixed their paint into a bucket and got a merged baby.
Chris, tell us about Blue Kid 2.
Okay, Blue Kid 2. So, of course, this is a sequel to a game that I swear to God came out on the 3DS at some point. But I went to my 3DS and looked in the eShop and it wasn't there. So I was like... But it was a mobile game, so I was at least able to watch footage of it. And so the original game was this kind of like a single screen platformer sort of challenge where you just defeated enemies until a star appeared, you grabbed the star, and then moved on to the next level. So this one, and you know, it was in an effort to rescue your girlfriend who was swooped out of the sky by some flying demon thing, exactly like the intro to Ghosts and Goblins. And what I appreciate, besides the biddies.
More biddies. That is right. More biddies. No time for games now dropping biddies.
Dropping yeah. biddies!
And Prime dropped more. Oh, my God. Just making the stream chug.
All right. Thanks, folks. I mean, they are paying money to screw you up, so that's
They are. You know, it's worth it for that.
Fair play to them. Yeah, fair play to them. So the second game, it's kind of funny because, you know, it starts off with the dude and the girl and the little baby like out on a picnic, and the exact same intro happens except that the demon thing grabs the baby instead of the lady. And so your adventure begins. That's the whole story. What this is it is a you know, a stage-by-stage platformer where you go to different worlds, and each world just has this big list of you know, levels. Let's see, I think it's 7 each, and then there's a boss, and then there are bonus levels, which we'll get to. Or no, I guess there's a tower, too, so I guess it's 9 levels per each. Anyways, whatever. So you go through these stages, and of course the first stage is a tutorial stage, teaches you how to do all the moves, which are jumping and double jumping. That's pretty much all the moves. This is one of those games where it is just the controlling the character and jumping, and every button jumps except for the directional pad. So it's confirmed you can play this one with an NES controller.
Nice.
Because
that's what I always wait to hear in your reviews. Yeah. If you could use the NES controller.
Early on, yeah, that's the case with this one, is that you could use anything, really. I mean, if you have an Atari controller hook up for the NES, for the Switch, then it would work here. So you basically go through and, you know, you jump on enemies' heads to defeat them, and that works on anything, including when you're underwater, kind of swimming like Mario. You can actually bop enemies on the head down there and be fine. You have 3 hearts, and if you lose them all, then you die, of course. But there's no lives counter or anything like that. You just start the stage over. And so the whole point of the thing is that you can either just run from the far left of the screen to the far right of the screen and, you know, do the basic jumping and platforming to get through the stage, or you can go through and collect everything. Either way is fine. It basically gives you 6 different objectives to do in the stage, and each one, if you meet that objective, will give you basically a point to your counter, and it'll tell you how many counters there are, how many points you can get total, which is 360 across the game. And so the 6 things that you can do are that there's basically you can get to the end of the stage in enough time, which is not a lot of time. It's actually kind of the speed run achievement. Like usually it's about 1.5 minutes. And damn, that's never enough. That's never enough time to do the rest of them, except for maybe just the first stage alone, where it gives you like 3 minutes, I think, to do everything. So you can do that. I think if you get to the end of the stage with full hearts, you get an achievement there. If you defeat all the enemies in the stage, you get an achievement there. And there's 2 different kinds of stars. There's the stars that are just hanging in the air. There's anywhere between, you know, it'll tell you in the stage how many there are. It's like, it could be like 80, 100, or in some stages just 5. And then there are special blue stars, which usually require a special trick to get to. Oftentimes it's like, you know, jumping off an enemy's head, double jumping onto another enemy's head, double jumping off that, and then, you know, going across the top of the screen to drop down onto a ledge that you have to double jump onto. Like, it's usually they're tricky to get and often hidden. You know, there's like hidden walls and stuff like that, all kinds of secrets in this stage. And so there's going to be 3 of those in a given level. And then there's a balloon that starts to float up as you, come to the end of the stage. And if you can get there in time to pop it, then, that's also an achievement. So lots and lots to do in this game. And of course you can start the levels over and over again until you get all of it. So you could work on just one thing at a time. So that actually creates an interesting aspect of this game, because the same level, you know, despite being the same level, it might be a completely different experience. If you're going for time, there might be completely different obstacles racing through the stage than there would be if you were to slow down and try and collect every star and defeat every enemy. And, you know, like I said, it's kind of impossible to do all 6. And indeed, I was just out of curiosity after a few worlds, I was like, I wonder if anybody has tried to speedrun this, because this looks like a very speedrunnable game. And sure enough, somebody has a 4-hour 100% speedrun of this thing.
Oh, God.
So I'm like, yeah, there's a lot to do in this game. So yeah, the enemies are interesting because a lot of them, you know, they're kind of emulated from classic platformers, and some of them are a little shameless. We got like Bullet Bill type of enemies, you know, with their cannons that look like that, you know, what a Bullet Bill cannon looks like, mm-hmm. and how it doesn't exist in any other game. Well, they got those in here. The bosses are where it gets really odd, because the first boss is a tree that shoots things at you, and it has a face in the tree, and you're supposed to bop it on the nose. And I'm like, these guys, how did they not get a cease and desist for this character? And I got to the third stage, or the boss in the third world, and I was like, this is exactly a fight against a werewolf in Castlevania Rondo of Blood, only it's cute. And, you know, things like that. It's like the kind of really close but not quite there, like, you know, whether it's an homage or just straight ripping off, you know, who knows.
I'm going to go with homage.
Yeah, it's homage. But I just thought it was real hilarious. Either way, like I said, this game has, like, it's kind of like you can, it is whatever you want to get out of it. If you want to race to the end of every stage and just get through the thing, you can certainly do so in, like, you know, an hour or 2 hours. The stages do get pretty hard. Like I said, you know, it's the usual kind of platformer fare as far as, like, the layout of the stages. You know, you got your beautiful verdant green fields as your first stage, and then, you know, you go to the desert, and then, you know, you got, like, the zombie stage, and then you got, like, or, you know, the horror type stage with the haunted mansion, and then you got, like, an ice stage, things like that. But, you know, there is an incentive to try and get more stars, in that every world has, I think it's up to 3 bonus levels that you need to collect a certain amount of stars in order to unlock, and they're a little more challenging. Not entirely sure what the reward is for getting through all of them, because I didn't get through all of them, but they also all have their own, you know, 6 achievements that you can get in the stage. So, yeah, all in all, despite the simplicity of it, I mean, they really took, you know, they distilled the essence of, like, platforming in, like, an old school style game, and they really just, you know, blew it up as big as they could, like, just to, you know, give you a whole bunch of content. So I appreciated that out of it. Also, the soundtrack. I don't know if it's available for purchase separately, but somebody did actually upload all the music onto YouTube. It's, man, pretty much all the music in this game is just straight up, like, 8-bit bangers. I really enjoy it. So that's pretty cool.
Looks like it's on SoundCloud.
Okay, can you buy stuff on SoundCloud?
I don't think so.
Yeah, if it's not on Bandcamp, then I don't know.
Yeah, they'll have to get it on Bandcamp or something. I will pass on the message.
Yeah, great soundtrack work is what I'm going to say about that one.
Awesome. Well, overall, $5, what do you think?
Yeah, $5. I mean, if you want a nice, quick platformer that you can just, you know, play and put down or put a bunch of hours into, this is solid. I mean, it's more solid than it looks, for sure. Like, if you look at it, it does kind of look a little bit budget gamey. But once you get into the meat of it, it's, like, really cleverly put together. And, you know, like I said, the quality's there enough that somebody wanted to put 100% speedrun out there of it. So,
yeah very I'd true. Say worth it. Awesome. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I wanted to amend a fact from my Baobabs review. The sheep do not have burritos for faces. They have coffins for faces. The burritos are actually tacos. Now it makes
sense.
Exactly. The burritos are actually tacos, and they're in the sky among the clouds.
Yeah, just, that makes a lot more tacos. Sense. I was confused before, but now it all clicks.
Yeah, sorry. So, almost misrepresented my favorite weird ass game.
Oh, Jesus. Chris Purnell, it is always good having you two on here chatting. Do either of you have any final words before we move on?
That was it for me. Amending facts.
Baobab. Just, I guess, keep dodging those sniffles, because they're fucking coming and they're no joke. Woof. Stupid season. Also, yeah, keep playing great game.
Yeah, and get 8 hours of sleep per night.
Yeah, God, I need to listen to that. Jesus. Yes, sleep for 8 hours. They claim that science says 6 now. Science is full of shit. 8 hours.
6 hours if you're, like, a teenager and you've still got all your health.
Teenagers are still supposed to technically have, like, 10 to 11 hours a day.
10 hours? Jesus.
Yeah.
I agree.
That's why some places, schools are trying to get the start time pushed back later in the day. because it's actually really unhealthy. I find it funny because articles about it are always like, oh, teenagers shouldn't be waking up at like 7:30 a.m. to go to school at 8. And I'm sitting here going, my kid gets up at 5.
Yeah, honestly, I was always pushing the envelope. I was getting up at like 7:45 to get to class at 8.
She gets up at 5 to get on the bus at 6. She's the first kid on in the entire county.
Damn.
Yeah. Holy Somebody's got to be.
Yeah, that's no thank you for that. I would be happy to see that happen because honestly, I feel like lack of sleep on a regular basis was kicking the tar out of me in high school. It was never a good thing for me. And that was me walking to school, like I said, pushing the envelope. I wake up with just enough time to put some pants on and a shirt and run up the street. I showered at night, so I didn't have to do it in the morning, so I just could sleep for longer. It was, yes, more hours before school, more sleeping. Sleep for 8 hours, damn it.
All right, and finally, we are bringing in our good friend Jacob Garner. Jacob, how are you doing?
Once again, you describe me as a friend. I love it.
You're all I have in life. You and Cole, you're all I've got. Lot of cats.
Yeah, that I was going to say 13 cats.
Yeah. Is it at 13 right now?
Yes.
Huh.
Yep. Pickle was 9, Dale is 10, and then the kittens are 13.
Wait, the kittens are 13?
11, 12, and 13.
Oh, okay.
You dipshit. Right.
No, I thought you were like, and I'm making the kittens number 13. Like, I'm just like, that doesn't make sense. I mean, do like 3 kittens equal 1 cat?
Well, it went from 10 to 13, so you have to kind of figure that there's multiple numbers in there.
Joe, I don't listen to you.
Nah, true. Anyway, final game to talk about tonight is called Tokyo Warfare Turbo, developed and published by Pablo. Oh, I'm going to kill this name. Vidaware Sans, released November 15th on Xbox One for $14.99. A tank expansion pack is also available for $4.99 and includes 8 new vehicles. Tokyo Warfare Turbo is the ultimate tank arcade where World War II and modern tanks, APCs, and AA vehicles face each other in the battlefield. Jacob, tell us about Tokyo Warfare Turbo.
You remember Steel Battalion for the Xbox?
Yeah.
Like, remember how in the campaign is just like, hey, so this is your control for this, and oh no, we're being attacked by the enemy! And everyone around you dies. And so now your very first level is you figuring out what the fuck all your controls are?
Yeah.
That is exactly like this game, except that game had a storyline. And it also had a really kick-ass controller that you had to buy that cost pretty much as much as the console that it came on, if I remember correctly.
I forget how much that was when it first came out.
I thought it was 400. I thought it was like 250 at least.
Might have it was been ridiculous. 200. I know it wasn't 400. That's just insane for a game. It might be worth that now.
Fair enough. Although, like that, now it's just a curiosity because I mean, Xbox Live is gone, so line of contact you couldn't even use anymore.
True, but you could still play the first one.
Right, but anyway, we're getting sidetracked. So, which is usual. Thank God we still have 45 minutes to talk.
Wish.
So the game just tosses you into a battle, like a team battle, right off the bat. And it's just like, all right, well, you know, just shoot up a bunch of stuff. And it doesn't give you any kind of instruction on the controls. Like, there's literally no story because all this is a bunch of deathmatch, multiplayer, you know, kind of things. And you just go around and you can, you know, as you like win or, you know, how you perform on matches, you level up, you unlock stuff. And, you know, that is pretty much it. So pretty much there's different, right? So going back into the game, there's different factions. There is, I believe it's Chinese, German, American, Russian, and I think there's like 2 other factions that you could choose from. All it really is that you get to choose from different vehicles and you get different paint schemes with them. You get cute anime girls based on, you know, the different military uniforms and stuff like that. But that's about it. Like, nothing seemed particularly, like, noteworthy about any of the factions. Like, the Germans are really strong in this. Or, like, the Americans, you know, like, their tanks are better in this, like, kind of thing. Like, it just seems like, all right, here's a tank. You get to fuck around in it. you know, this thing has more hit points than any PC, but, you know, it's also slower and it's harder to maneuver. And yeah, it's just, that is the basis of the game. It's just like an arcade deathmatch thing. Kind of like, I don't know, it reminded me like of Unreal Tournament back in the day, like on when, you know, when you would play it on like Sega Dreamcast and stuff.
Good old days.
Well, my main issue with this game is, and it reminded me a lot of Hover, which I reviewed about a year ago, I think, for Xbox One when that finally came out. And it seems like there's been like a bunch of games that port from Steam over to Xbox, and they're like, oh, well, it's Xbox compatible because, you know, we'll accept this controller and stuff like that. But in all reality, they don't. They expect you to still use a keyboard and mouse. And this is one of those games where it's very apparent that they don't really give a shit about using a controller. Like, you're expected to hook up your keyboard and mouse for this thing.
Yeah, when they like, have the options in the menu, and even, like, the default menu options treat it as though you're using a mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, which drove me up the damn wall with this. And on top of it, it's just...
overwhelming.
Yeah. It's just like, you just kind of get tossed into it. And like, I mean, I got it with like Steel Battalion, cause that was the point of the storyline. And to a degree that was the fun of it. But with this one, it's just like, there's no tutorial. There's no like, you know, here's how you steer your tank. This is how you manage like driving the tank while also aiming your, you know, cannon on your tank. And it's just like, and if anything, it was just very confusing. I died a lot. I mean, I got plenty of kills in two. I mean, it was marginally fun. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I was awful at this game. It you're not joking around when you say it just drops you in. When you start the game, it literally drops you into a match and it's like, go.
Yeah.
And you're like, fucking do what? I don't know what I'm doing. And then I was getting shot, and then I was getting blown up, and then I still had no idea what I was doing.
And did you have anybody respawn on top of you?
No, I didn't have that.
I had tanks literally drop on top of me.
That's kind of awesome. Did you get any clips of that?
No, I didn't. Oh. I could probably make it happen because it happened enough. But it was just like, you'd all of a sudden hear this like, thud! And, like, you'd have a little bit of a problem moving, and then I'd look to my left, and I realized something dropped on me, and then it would scoot away, oh, you know, Lord. Far away from me. But it was just, like, the game, it seems like it's kind of fun, but it feels like it's also haphazardly built. And, yeah, I don't know, like... I felt like there really wasn't like much to say about it. Like, it's just like you're given like a few generic maps. Like, here's an industrial thing. Here's an oil field. Here's a snowy area. Like that kind of stuff. And you're just, as I said, like, you know, as we both agreed upon, you're just dropped in there and, you know, have at it.
Like, so what in your opinion could they do to improve this game? First off, I would love.
It needs a tutorial.
Yeah.
First off. It absolutely needs a tutorial. Second, if they're going to be serious about having an Xbox port for this, then their menus actually need to reflect it. Like, because like, despite playing around with the menus for like a good 15 minutes, I still like I had a hard as hell time navigating it. First off,
and I don't think you could use the D-pad in the menus. I tried using the D-pad and I wasn't getting anywhere with it. So yeah, you had to use the analog stick.
Yeah, which it just didn't make sense, and it was, like, it's just not well, like, stuff doesn't pop out to you, so it was, like, it was hard to figure out what exactly I was highlighting in the menus. And I did notice a few spelling errors here and there. One of the achievements actually has one. It calls them Tonks instead of Tanks. Which, I, at the same time, I was just like, I don't know if they're, like, being meta and referencing, like, this, like, the stock stonks, you know, meme that's out there.
Maybe.
I don't know. But yeah, it's just, like, the game, it drops you in there. It's not, I don't know, like, it was kind of fun.
It's just not intuitive.
It's not. And the problem is that it's not pick up and play. Like, I can't just, like, hand a controller to my wife and just be like, hey, play, you know, play this with me. And, like, even if, like, she kind of stinks, like, she still gets the hang of it. It's like, I don't know, like, it's just, this is a game you have to spend plenty of time perfecting.
Learning and mastering.
Yeah, just, and the thing is like, it's not even, like, the fight, like, it's not even like a fighting game where it's like, oh, well, this attack takes up this many frames of animation. It's really just, how do I drive this thing again? Like, not like, I don't know. It just, I wasn't pleased. Like, I was kind of bummed because the video that you showed me looked pretty fun.
Yeah, this is, it's not a very easy recommendation to give. It's just so geared towards people who are already familiar with the genre and familiar with the game in general. And for new players coming in and just getting dropped into the battle, it doesn't do anything to help ease you into the situation. For as little as it guides you in the game, the settings and the menus are just overwhelming with the options that are there. And I still, like, control wise, I still couldn't really find a control scheme that worked for me. I No. couldn't find a camera angle that worked for me.
Nope.
I had to use settings on my Elite controller just so I could drive normally and aim inverted. Because when I turned on the invert controls, it inverted everything up, down, and left and right.
Oh God.
Yeah. And it was, I don't know if I'm clicking the wrong options because it wasn't very clear what was there. But, yeah, this is a kind of tough one to recommend, which sucks because it looked really, really fun when we saw the trailer for it. And, you know, I had fun with what I could do, but I was just getting my ass handed to me. And it's tough to get behind a game that is just so hard to get into.
Yeah, and I think I had one match where I did better than 1-to-1, where my kill death ratio was just like a straight 1-to-1. Yeah, it just, I don't know. Like, I wish more time and effort had been put into this port, because as we'd said, it really just expects you to be using a keyboard and mouse.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a fair thing to do to, you know, somebody who's using a video game console. Like, sure, I get that the peripherals are available, but
they shouldn't be expected.
Right. The thing is like, unless it's something like, say, Steel Battalion, where you're like, you can't play the game without said controller, and it's not sold without said controller.
No.
You know, this thing, you know, it's like, oh yeah, you can play this on your Xbox, and you also need a keyboard and mouse, by the way. Like, no, that I think that's kind of crap.
I'll give him credit for trying, at least.
Yeah, we can. Like, hooray, you got a game released.
The effort did go into making some kind of control scheme work with the controller, but it's just not enough when the game expects you to use a keyboard and mouse. But overall, I got to know, $15, what's your verdict?
No.
Ouch.
Sorry. Yeah. It's just, it's a deathmatch, like, it's a, like, generic feels harsh, but it's just like,
when I mean, there's a lot of personality in the game with the character designs, and I appreciate the fact that you could choose an anime style or an HD style. You know, there's personality there. It's just, it's not intuitive, and it's not approachable.
And it doesn't show what the, like, you know, what the difference is. If there is much of a difference, and it's just, I don't know, it, like, and none of the maps ever felt, you know, particularly interesting. I don't, like, it's just, if it's on sale And I don't even know how to recommend this thing. Like, if it's on sale, if you have a keyboard and mouse and you enjoy, tank combat that doesn't play out like, you know, Halo, but instead, like, you have to figure out, like, a much different scheme, then give it a shot. But $15, like, to somebody who just had, like, is sitting at home with an Xbox controller, like, no, sorry. Yeah.
I have to agree with you on that. I know that there's a market for it out there. It's just newcomers are going to be really hard-pressed to find enjoyment in this one. It's just too steep of a learning curve to really get into for casual gamers.
And the thing is that it's just like, I don't even know what the market would be, because it's just like, like people who already own it on Steam and also own an Xbox. Like, I don't know. I just,
oh well,
I was a little miffed with it. So
I thought you were going to say befuddled.
I almost said befuddled, but I went with miffed.
Oh Lord. Words. Yeah, they are good words. Anyway, that is it for this episode. Jacob, thanks for being here. Cole, thanks for hanging out through the whole thing. Thanks to Pernell and Chris for being here and doing their thing as well. Jacob, since you're here, we'll give you the honors. Do you have any final words to end the show?
I do have final words for our, lucky Patreon listeners. Joe, how many of them are there?
Five.
And I'm five.
Wait, hold on. Cole, you're one of them?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so who are the other four? Joe, are you paying for your own Patreon content?
No, believe it or not, they're actual people.
Mike, is one of them your mom?
No.
All right, so who are the three people? Anyway, so for our Patreon listeners, pretty soon I'm going to be recording reviews of Doom and Doom Annihilation for your listening enjoyment, for all none of you that enjoyed my Dead Trigger review. So, yeah, that's right. We're going to be doing a string of movie reviews. The Doom Annihilation one might end up on the podcast, who knows, just because it actually came out this year. But you get to listen to it first!
Yeah, we'll find out.
How unfortunate.
We'll find out.
What?
We'll find out. We'll find out.
What do you mean we'll find out?
I don't know. It depends on when the hell you're free to actually fucking record something.
You just record something.